Hi, I'm Ksenia.
And I'm Anna.
And you're listening to CareerZilla, a podcast about careers and technologies.
We talk to experts from different industries to uncover the latest trends and technologies that shape the future of work.
If you want to learn something exciting about the world around you or looking for a next career step, this podcast is for you.
And now let's start. Today we are talking to Julia Estrate, psychologist and HR professional with many years of experience in finding new talents. Julia also hosts a series of YouTube videos related to the current and future employment trends. Today we ask her to share her professional insights and personal views on how the jobs of the future would look like and what skills we will need to acquire to be successful candidates for them.
Welcome, Julia. Thank you very much for joining us. Could you please introduce yourself and talk a little bit more about your project that you actually are working on?
Hi Anna, hi Ksenia, and thank you so much for welcoming me at this amazing podcast that you've started, CareerZilla. Very, very nice of you to host me. So you've already said my name. I'm a psychologist. I studied industrial organizational psychology and cognitive ergonomics. So for the past 18 years, I've been working in recruitment, but also in organizational development. Most of the 18 years, like 16 of them have been in recruitment. So that has been my main focus. Now, for the past 2 years and a half, something like this, half of my time is still dedicated to companies. And again, making recruitment better and supporting people to develop their personal and professional skills. And the other half is a bit of a mixed bag. So I do the podcast, the Skills for Mars podcast, which is, as you can imagine, and you see, it's definitely linked to what I do, and we will talk about it. Then I also do coaching, and this is mostly career coaching and with a focus on the people who reach the critical age of about 35, 40, 45, and they are shouting for a makeover. So there's a lot of reskilling involved. And then I also do, on the subjects that I love, a bit of writing. And I've also started doing a bit of animation. That's like more of a hobby, artsy kind of project that I like. Overall, I like working with people. I really love that I work on what I call the positive side of HR, which is hiring and developing versus administration and firing.
Sounds like you have a lot of different interests, but we would like to know more about one of your projects, your YouTube podcasts, Skills for Mars. How you came to this idea and what are the main topics that you discuss there?
First, I really like that you call it a project, because I first started, at the beginning, I didn't know how to call it. I called it my hobby, my passion, by whatever, but I really like that you call it a project. So Skills for Mars started out of love for long format podcasts, as many of my friends tell me, hey, Julia, this is too long. Maybe you can shorten it. I don't want to shorten it. usually episodes have 45 minutes to an hour. And I find that this is somehow needed to have deep conversations and get something out of them. Otherwise, it's too short and too superficial. So it started from this love for podcasts, but also from a deep frustration that I had when I attended a paid workshop on the future of work. And I really wanted to bring a sort of service, free service, to anyone who wanted to learn and listen about the future of work, to put my knowledge and the knowledge of the guests at their disposal. The main aim was to really take away this fear of the unknown, of what the future holds. And everyone is talking about technology replacing us. What will we do? Are we able to survive this? We will have no jobs. Will we get any income? So this is mostly the dystopian scenario, which I'm not so inclined to towards. And I really wanted to get people more energized and prepared for what's coming ahead. So the underlying theme is the future of work. The podcast started in November 2019, on the 2nd of November. So it's just a bit over 1 year. And it now has 5 series. One that is actually, that I actually call the future of work, that presents the various industries that are growing and the skill set that's needed to access them, access these industries. The other one is called Transitions. And this was a request after, I think I had about 10 or 12 episodes already ongoing on the future of work. And people have asked me to bring a bit more light on about what this change agility means. So I thought of inviting people who have made really big career changes, like from an opera singer to a marketing professional, or someone who gave up their vice president job to open up a cooking business, or moving from being a doctor to being an animator. Right, so this is a series that I call Transitions, and it really shows how people have taken the risks and they have managed to increase their change agility skills. So it's more of a showcase for these skills. Then the other two are dedicated to remote work. One is called Making Remote Work, and it was done in collaboration with the ODC. And the other one is called Starting Remote. It's a sort of a continuation. So the first one hosts mostly researchers and practitioners with deep knowledge in remote work. And Starting Remote is more about the tools that people can employ, new kind of technology to understand maybe more of the emotional intelligence or promote a certain type of leadership skills, help companies do assessments to understand if they're ready to move remote and so on. And the last one that just started, the first episode was released in December, is called Building Resilience, and is dedicated to getting this resilience muscle built, because we live in a new world of constant and overlapping change. There are no breathers anymore in between. Everything is always changing. So how can individuals, how can organizations, how can governments really become resilient and flexible enough to manage in this constant change? And I'm sure you share my feelings, because you've started this not a long time ago. I love doing it. It's so energetic. I've learned so much since I started it. When I looked at others doing podcasts, I just thought, oh, you need a mic, then you talk. And of course, I like talking, so what be hard about that? It looked easy. But then once you start, you realize you're not as good as talking as you think. Even though I've asked questions for my entire life, like interviewing has been my career, running interviews in a podcast is not the same. Technology, you have to learn all of that. You have to learn how to edit and do sound checking and all of how to promote your podcast. So all of these new skills, and I feel that I'm learning every single day. And I really, really love this incremental growth. It gives me so much energy.
Since you spent hundreds of hours by now talking about future of work, could you please make a brief summary for us about it? How our work will be transformed in the next decades, and how actually we can prepare ourselves for these upcoming changes?
Yeah, for sure. I can definitely give it a try. And as everyone knows, the world is changing, and I just said, and technology is advancing so rapidly, and our jobs advance with that. As I've just mentioned, some see dystopian scenarios, and I really think this is not the case. I don't think that we should see only the positives, but I am definitely more inclined towards the positives. I think that the options that we have right now in the world of work, of personal and professional development, are literally endless, and they can be scaled like never before. Like literally anything you can think about today, you can try and do it. And I also think that it's an amazing thing that machines will be able to take over tasks that don't really help us grow as humans. I'm taking cashiers as examples, or people that do food deliveries, even accountants. Don't get me wrong, they pay the bills, right? There's no argument. And for sure, right now they are needed. There's no replacement. But do they really add value, developmental value, to the human being that is actually performing them? Not a lot. And there are other industries that are growing, like healthcare, where the skills of these people can be better put to use, and plus they will add more value and they will feel more involved. They will have more impact on their surroundings, on their communities, and on their lives. And I really like, I'm not sure if you've heard, there's a company that I truly like called Fathom. It's an Australian company. And they use algorithms to match the skills for various jobs. They work with governments and with very large companies, and they look at where they can find overlaps. And they found amazing overlaps on jobs where we didn't even think to look, like accountants and cybersecurity, for example. The skill set required in really understanding data, analyzing data, being consultants for their companies to understand where the company should be in the future, it's the same as cybersecurity. The only thing that they are lacking is the hard knowledge of cybersecurity, but which can any hard knowledge can be easily learned. So as accountants move out because technology is taking over, companies don't need to dismiss them or fire them because there's a huge lack of cybersecurity experts. So they can easily transform those that definitely want to do cybersecurity into cybersecurity experts because there's a huge skill overlap. They also found, talking about cashiers, huge overlap between cashiers and healthcare and so on. So they have hundreds of analysis done, and it's just, we didn't look at this like this before. So I really feel that it's really endless possibilities. So we shouldn't be worried. I think we should just look at what we can do. I know of a company, another company called Mento. I'll have a podcast with them next week, who are helping employees who work in warehouses. So they're moving boxes from one shelf to another in becoming software developers. And they are successful in doing that. So there's overlap where we didn't think there would be overlap. There can be learning where we thought that maybe the skills and the knowledge is not sufficient.
I would like to pick up on your thoughts about the role of artificial intelligence and machine learning in the career development and how machines potentially can help us to match our skills to some novel areas or even find a new career path. Do you believe that machines can make really significant advancements in this area and change everything? I really like this idea that finding your own new career path can be optimized by the machine algorithms. And how important do you see the human component in the future in this area, in this process? Do you believe that search for a new career can be completely automated?
Oh, for sure. And they already do. There are companies. So just let's say that you don't really know what your talents are and what you can do. There are companies right now that already have 15, 20 years of experience and a lot of research and testing behind. You play some games, like literally you don't even feel like you're doing an assessment. And actually behind it, there's cognitive assessment, there's personality assessment. And then they can match you with different kind of jobs and they give you a percentage, how much you fit with those jobs. There are also companies that are using algorithms. There's a new startup right now in Vienna called Belongin that is looking at how future employees can find a company that fits their values. So not only the job that they think they like, but hey, are you a fit? Will you really like to work with these people? Do you really belong in this team? There's another company called TeamScope, and they're from Estonia, and they do team matching. And they use algorithms. And again, they are based on competencies, on values, and personality. So they can tell you, and they can tell managers, hey, do you really fit in? What's missing? What not? So you don't end up in the wrong place and in the wrong job. So definitely helping. There's another one, but I forgot their name. I will let you know by email. And this is a recruitment. This is a recruitment company. And what they do is they automize the process, so they take it away from the recruiter, the searching and proposing the job to the candidate. But they do it in a very, very nice way because, so first of all, their algorithm matches candidates to jobs, but then it also matches what the company values to the person values as well. And they give you a sort of report even before you have any kind of interview. And you understand, hey, is this exactly where I want to be applying to? So even before you get to interviews, even before you get to a TeamScope or a Belongin or whatever, you already know, do I really want this? Am I making an impact like this? Is this what I want to do? Will I love it for the future? And the good part is that what needed to be automated in the recruitment process, they managed to do it in an amazing way. Which is not very robotic and you just say, oh, okay, you have the company says skill X, Y, Z, you have X and Y, so okay, we talk with you. But they also give the people, the candidates, an idea of who the company is and how themselves can match with the company, which is one step forward. And it's even better than recruiters were doing until now. So yes, AI definitely helps. But to your point, I think self-discovery, self-knowledge is still extremely important. I think that these kind of algorithms can maybe raise some questions at the, for you and maybe sees things that you're blind and you're not understanding about yourself, or even underline some of them that you already know and you say, yeah, okay, this is a match, both me and the algorithm so the same, so most probably it's there. But they should help you know yourself better. And I think that the decision should still be with a person and not with an algorithm. Not now. I don't think the algorithms are up to the task at this point.
Or at least, let's say, not up to the task yet. Development in this area goes extremely fast. Will these technologies maybe put HR professionals out of their job soon? What do you think?
Oh, not at all. We can finally do what we are supposed to be doing. So a lot of time right now, so I take, for example, I start with recruitment. A lot of time right now is spent on administrative tasks like posting jobs, screening CVs, planning candidates for interviews. This is half of the time of recruitment, right? You work with people, so their schedules change. Even if we had this booked for 2 o'clock, maybe something intervened and we need to move it to the next week. But next week is not good for either of them. So you get a lot of administrative work that is not automated. Some companies, yes, they have it, they're further away. A recruiter's job is a very mixed bag. You do marketing, you do sales, you do procurement, you do negotiations. It's not a simple task. You need to really know the business. You are better off to be a consultant to the candidate and to the business rather than spend half of your time in things that don't matter, that don't bring any value. And it's the same with HR. Automation in terms of databases and just pushing the button and getting a report is what we want to get. Right now, HR people spend a lot of time just doing reports. Taking away that and concentrating on consulting with the business and really being a mediator for the employees, it's what you want, where you want to get.
What is your opinion on CV screening technologies, the ones that large companies are often using? Or do you think that currently people, applicants, are still not very familiar with it and do not know how to correctly interact with those algorithms? Do you think that while using these technologies, good candidates can literally be missed out?
Yeah. The software is not perfect. And a lot of the companies that I work, a lot of my colleagues still process CVs manually. Because otherwise the systems yet are not good enough to match skills and to match candidates. They're not there yet. Some are better than others. And for example, for simple jobs like warehouse, cashiers, high volume jobs, they are better than for low volume jobs. I mean, it makes sense. But for the rest, for specialized qualified jobs, there's a lot of manual work. And indeed, we are somewhere in the middle right now. The algorithms are there, but not good enough. And the people know that the algorithms are there, but they don't understand exactly how they work. So indeed, writing a CV nowadays is a tricky business. So for example, LinkedIn already starts matching skills, right? If you have the premium account, then you can see how you match with the skills. But for example, let's say that they ask for, they just have this senior leadership. If you don't have this exact phrase in your CV called senior leadership, then they will not match that skill. So you have to go back to your CV, find where you included leadership, and maybe if you really did senior leadership, add that specific phrase so the algorithm can match you. Now, for those companies who are really looking for a match, right, you have 10 criteria and the candidate needs to match 6 of them or 8 of them, and you only find 5 and you're not looking in the background or not reading the CV to understand what's really there, it's hard. It's not there yet.
Aren't you scared that this use of screening technology can increase a certain bias and lead eventually to the discrimination of some groups of people? For example, probably young professionals who are first generations of university graduates in their family, who probably did not get an opportunity to talk to career consultants who would otherwise explain them there is this certain key terms, keywords, which should be always present in your CV if you apply for this type of jobs. Otherwise, this screening technology, screening algorithm will not identify you as a relevant candidate. What are your thoughts about it?
And that's why still most of it is done manually. Yes, there is bias because the systems are created by human beings. We have unconscious biases that we don't even understand how they manifest. And knowing the human mind, we're again, not there yet. So definitely. And you've had the Amazon case. You've had various cases where bias has been discussed. So they're working on it for sure. But still, all of my colleagues, myself included, we look at CVs still manually, because you can figure out the person and their professional development better by reading the CV than not. And don't forget that the market is very narrow for most of the jobs out there. So you need to do it because you need to find the hidden gems in the candidate pool base. And there are people who maybe have a very good job right now and they don't want to be found. So they will not have the keywords on their CV. They would, just by design, the way they design their own CV, would have missed on those keywords because they don't want to be found, but you do want to find them. So you really need a deep understanding of the industries, of their professional careers, of the different companies out there and what different jobs mean, to understand if that's the right person for you and if you should contact them. That's why there's still a lot of manual work. Once the algorithms get there, I think this can be definitely improved. There are companies working on this, and there are companies who have actually quite a long experience. Some have 10, 15, 20 years, and they're improving the algorithms more and more. Now, in what concerns keywords, I think there's two sides of it. So first of all, people should read the job description, right? The job ad, they should read it. And their CV should always match the job that they are applying for. Let's say I apply for a cybersecurity job, but I only have one mention of cybersecurity in my CV. No one would select me, right? Maybe there are 20 candidates or even 10 candidates who applied, but three of them have the cybersecurity written all over their CV. Why would someone ask me to come along to an interview? Why would they waste their time? Because my CV doesn't show that I've done it. So first of all, they will definitely select the people that are more suitable for that particular job. And maybe if they don't find anyone, maybe at some point, just to say, maybe this is a hidden gem, let's call Yulia and give her a chance. But first they will go and pick the low-hanging fruits. That's what happens. You want to, recruitment needs to be extremely fast. So you want to be fast and support your business to hire at the right time. So looking at the job descriptions, if you apply for something, and really understanding what the company is looking for, if you match that, what they're looking for, you should match your CV to what they're looking for as well, to the requirements. So keywords are actually important, and keywords are important even on LinkedIn, right? The way we do search on LinkedIn is by keywords. So learning keywords, I think that's one of the skills that you need nowadays with everything. I mean, if you're able to use hashtags, which are keywords, in Instagram or Facebook or LinkedIn or wherever, then you can use the same in your CV. So yes, keywords, they need to learn them. There's no other way around it. Candidates need to be prepared for this, as well as companies need to get prepared. And at some point we will meet and we will have better results, but some things need to be learned by one side or another.
Well, you mentioned that recruitment is a very labor intense and a very expensive process. A company has to invest time and money in hiring a candidate. And if this candidate was not really a perfect match, it can be that this candidate leaves the company in a couple of weeks or a couple of months, and the whole recruitment process has to start again. And at the same time, there is also a trend towards short-term or project-based employment. How do you think these two a little bit contradictory and opposite trends will coexist in the future, when on the one hand you have a very long and intense hiring process, and on the other hand, probably this candidate is needed just for 1 year or half a year long project?
So first of all, I so much love this change towards shorter term project-based employment. I've worked with organizations where people could be in a role for 10, 15. I even met people who were in the same job for 30 years. And you can see the pain both for the organizations and for the person. Honestly, routine kills you slowly. And doing the same job, knowing the same people, not having big challenges is not good for any part. I think that this change is what we need to be prepared for the future. And honestly, who wants to spend their entire lives in one job? Look at you. You've started a podcast in something that you didn't work into before. Change is good. It brings growth. I have very good friends who are doctors, And this is maybe one of the professions that is thought of as being a for-life profession. And even those who are at the top of their careers, they are using and they invested in the latest technology and they are keeping engaged and doing things to the best of their abilities, they call me and they want to change. They cannot do it anymore. I think at some point, whether it's once in your lifetime, two times, for some people, 10 times, you need to do something different. I have one person that I do coaching with, and she changes jobs. She's already 45, somewhere there. And she changes jobs every 3-4 years. She's very good at her job. She's very good at picking up, at learning, at changing. She delivers amazing results. But after this period of time, she just gets bored. She doesn't feel the passion anymore. She likes to start new projects. She likes to see things grow. She's not the type of person that is maintaining things, rather the type of person that is building things. So these people need to have an opportunity to do what they like and to change. I'm one of those. I love project-based employment. And companies are getting prepared for this. Recruitment is expensive. Hiring the wrong person in the wrong job is expensive. I think a person can bring value to a job after 6 months, most probably around a year. It takes you, it even takes you, come on, 2 or 3 weeks to learn where the bathroom is and where to eat and all of that, right? Just to get your grips on the environment and not even a job. And then it takes you time to learn the tools, learn the people, what you have to do. So 6 months is just onboarding. And then you're doing your job, and to really add value, maybe a year and a half. So I do think that maybe if you get employed, not on a project base, but on a long-term kind of contract, and if you are only spending there 6 months, then you added no value. Like if someone doesn't tell me that that was a project and they've changed every 6 months, then I would definitely frown upon their change as a recruiter. If they were project-based and they proved that they have this change and learning agility and they can move from one project to another and deliver, that's amazing. That's a person you want in your company. But then you have to expect them to want a change in the company. I have another example of an MBA guy that I hired maybe 2014, somewhere there. So 6-7 years ago. He's in an oil and gas company. So very stable company. One of those where people have the same job for 30 years. One of those that actually only promote people after a year, maybe some platforms even 2 years in the same role because they want a bit of stability. And this guy, they are okay with him to change jobs every 7 to 8 months because he is so good. He is amazing at understanding, and he's a senior executive. He's amazing at understanding challenges that people have never been able to solve. He gets in, he solves them, but then he needs to move forward. But then you get him to a new challenge, and then you get this kind of people that you can move inside in your organization that can solve things extremely, extremely quickly. For sure, there will be people who like stable, forever kind of jobs, and there are companies who will provide them. But I think this move towards shorter term, project-based, really exercising that change muscle is really, really good. And you get that passion and the love back, right? Like when you are with a new lover, you feel the butterflies again.
But what would be your advice for people who are probably very stressed by this idea of constant change, which I agree, this is the world we are living in. And probably for them, it's an incredible level of stress and they need to build up certain level of resilience. How to build up this resilience to the change?
Start slow. I have a friend who doesn't even like to change the food that they eat. So start there. Like literally start there. Start with small changes. Change the where you sit at your desk every single day and get used to that. Change the food that you eat. And if you're already above that level, I don't know, change cities, change friends, join a different meetup group, change a hobby. You can start really, really slow. It feels like an elephant, but even an elephant can be eaten piece by piece.
Irregardless of the industry, what do you think will be the most needed skills for people to increase their employability in the future? Likely those are going to be soft skills, but maybe you can name a few so we can all start preparing.
For sure, it's soft skills, and you will not hear anything new. I mean, the skills that we have, the soft skills that we have already been mapped a million times. No one will tell you anything new. It's just that the accent is maybe different from one period to another. And for sure, you've heard me saying this a million times. Change and learning agility, these are essential. Ownership and accountability, especially with the move of towards working remotely. Short-term kind of jobs and project-based jobs where no one is supervising you. You are expected to go in there and deliver. You can't do without. And even in a normal employment, ownership and accountability are definitely skills that everyone is looking for because they want to be able to rely on you and to trust you. You give trust, they give trust, and everything works. And then for sure, people agility. We work with each other, so the people skills are extremely needed, especially in this world of machines. This is what will differentiate us.
That's really good that you mentioned remote work, because I actually wanted to ask a question regarding it. We know you are a remote work advocate, and you also discussed this topic in your podcast. But what do you think in general about the future of the remote work? Will it become our reality after the pandemic ends, rather than the exception as it was in the previous years?
Yeah, I'm an advocate, but I don't think remote work is for everyone, people or companies. And I have plenty of friends who need to be in an office. Like literally, they cannot work from home. This is not new. Remote work is not a new trend. It has been here for decades. But 2020 has just been an accelerator. And I think the good thing is that companies who are fully against had a taste. They learned right now how they can use it to their advantage and to their employees' advantage. And they have some tools in their belt right now. But the trend, which I think is very good and should continue, is the accent that was put on the right organizational behaviors, like leadership, the change in leadership from command and control to a more supporting kind of leadership, focus that was put on transparency and open discussions on mental health. It's not that we didn't talk about these topics before, but it was mostly HR shouting about them. And everyone said, yeah, this blah, blah kind of thing, the soft things, yeah, just let us carry on with our business. But right now they realize that in a remote kind of setting, this doesn't work. What we've done before doesn't work. So you have business leaders and just individuals who are supporting the same kind of change. So this is a very, very good and positive trend. So even if remote work is not for everyone, discussing about these subjects and having them on everyone's mind is extremely important. And I think remote work will definitely stay on. And it will increase, but I think it will take various forms for various organizations and people. And some will use it as a strategy, like software companies who might like to have a remote first kind of approach, right? And their whole strategy will be wrapped around this. But some will use it as a perk. I work with companies that are really, really office-based, older type of companies in old industries, but they can no longer afford not to have remote work as a perk because they cannot access critical talent. This talent will not accept an offer without having this flexibility. So they need to provide it as a perk. But now they have the tools and they've learned how to do it. And some will just use remote work as a tool, as a means to an end, and it will work. Most of the companies will definitely work on a hybrid type of model. So not fully remote, but yeah, somewhere in between, which is the harder type of model. You have all sorts of issues arising from that. So that gives a lot of work to HR, business leaders, and even researchers to understand how to make hybrid work.
Yeah, that sounds like a challenge. Probably to finalize our discussion, if you talk today to a very young person who's just started their career in 2020, what would be your key advices, how to start and what is important to keep in mind?
So I would start with network, find mentors, do internships, do volunteer work, try diverse slates, listen to people, open your mind, reflect, learn, and truly try to exercise the change muscles. Try to get calculated risk and to get to know yourself. You're just starting. No one knows what they're going to do in 5 or 10 years from now. Industries change, companies change. And if you ever get this question in an interview, where do you see yourself in 5 or 10 years? Just get out of the door. Like literally, I don't know how to answer. As a recruiter, if anyone would ask me that, I would say, why are you asking me that? I have no idea. I don't know. This world is changing so fast. And I really want to get the right opportunities. I really want to get an open mind and understand where the opportunities lie. Get to understand, how do I calculate, is this the right opportunity for me or not? Can I do it or not? Can I bring value? Is this in the direction of my values or not? And just go with it and try to learn and try to change. So I thought, if someone still keeps this question, just run away from them. experiment, fail. Don't be afraid to fail. Everyone fails. But if you fail, take the time, and even if it's hard, even if it's bloody hard, sit down, jot down, if you don't want to do it with someone else, think about where you have failed and why. Was this not the right job? Was this not the right team? Did you do something wrong? Could you change something about yourself? Can you do something better in the future? And just improve 1%. 1%, if you calculate 1% a day or a week, you have either 300 and something percent per year or at least 52% per year, which is incredible growth. So just take it one by one, fail, learn, and move on. And as I said before, we live in a time of unprecedented growth and limitless possibilities in terms of careers. We live in a world where we can explore, and none of our predecessors, none of our parents and grandparents have been here before. This is amazing. We're like the Jean-Jacques Cousteau in the world of work. So be curious. Be amazed, move forward, and just try to bring value to anyone around you.
Thank you very much for this advice. It was a really great final remark for our conversation. I hope that our listeners can put your ideas into practice, and this advice will make their life better in this uncertain, turbulent time.
Thank you so much, and thanks for inviting me. It's been a great talk and great questions.